Good morning, everyone. We're going to open up the Committee on Judiciary in the Senate. Today is Wednesday. We have one bill that's set for public hearing and possible work session. The others are work sessions. We're going to go ahead and start with the testimony on House Bill 2385. So I'll open up a public hearing on that and allow counsel to go ahead and give us an overview while we get all the sheets. We have some panels that we're going to be having presenting to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2385 prohibits smoking in a motor vehicle while a person age 16 or younger is in the vehicle, creates a graduated fine schedule for first, second, and subsequent offenses. There's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact and no amendment.
All right. So I have a panel of legislators. I'm not sure if everyone's here, but we probably should bring another chair up just in case. Why don't y'all come on up, Senator Verdick, Marset, Rep. Greenlick, and Rep. Riley, who's who I've got on the testimony lineup list. So if there's someone coming in for any
pinch hitting.
Yeah. And why don't we... All right, whoever wants to lead off, ID, and go forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Chuck Riley. I represent Hillsborough, Corneas, and Forest Grove, and I bring you this bill today for your consideration. And it's a pretty simple bill. As you can see, it's less than a page, and that's the kind of bills I like. It will do one thing. It will protect kids' health. It is a very simple bill. You will not be allowed to smoke in a vehicle with children present. There are a couple of issues that I want to address. One is, why is this a primary, not a secondary offense? And I've answered the press about that two or three times, and my answer is pretty simple. Why should I have to run a red light to protect my children's health? There's pretty wide support, as you will see. The health community, the public health community, public safety is not against this bill. They're okay with it. OSP, in fact, in the House testified that they felt they would have no problem with this bill. In fact, they were asked, well, why not just education for folks? And the answer was, well, we tried that with some other issues, and while it helped a little, it wasn't the answer. We discovered when we tried to educate folks that putting children in car seats was a good thing. And we had a long education process, which didn't result in a whole lot of compliance. But as soon as it was made a law, even before there were stops, there was a huge jump in compliance. And that's what we're hoping for with this bill, and I believe that will be the result. So I'm going to pass it on to some other people, but if you have questions, I'll be here.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bill Morris at Senate District 6, and I'm here to support the bill. I introduced a bill, but we didn't move it because this was moving. You do have the dash ones, which I don't. If you choose to move them, fine. If you don't, that's fine. It makes it a secondary offense. They don't stop a person for that violation, but if they stop them for something else, it is an offense, and the fine is smaller. However, the bill itself, which I totally support, I was asked by one constituent three times, not three constituents one time, but one constituent three times to pass a bill to this effect. And so I did introduce it, and I think it's unconscionable, and people don't even think about it or don't see it that way, to smoke in a closed confined space with children present, causing damage to their health. In fact, the latest research shows that it causes damage to pets as well, so I don't know if we want to add pets to this bill. I don't think so. But I think it's time to do this. Now, and my theory also is that if we make something a law, that the majority of people will abide by the law because it is a law and not worry about being caught. I mean, not do it because they think they're going to get caught. I think most people will recognize this as something they should do, they have to do, and will abide by it. So I think it's a good bill, and I will support it when it comes to the floor.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Caitlin Cushing, legislative aide to Senator Jenny Burdick, representing District 18, and I'm here on her behalf and will summarize testimony before you. On January 1st of this year, the Clean Indoor Air Act, legislation sponsored by my boss, went into effect protecting Oregon workers from the negative effects of secondhand smoke in the workplace. House Bill 2385 builds on the work done in 2007 by protecting Oregon's children from the health effects of secondhand smoke in vehicles. Secondhand smoke exposure is the most preventable cause of respiratory illness in children. Children exposed to secondhand smoke show greater likelihood of a myriad of illnesses. Children are most often exposed to the secondhand smoke by their families at home and in the car, and the confined quarters in a vehicle are especially dangerous for our children. A recent study by researchers at the Harvard School of Public Health found alarming levels of secondhand smoke could be generated in just 5 minutes in a vehicle. Secondhand smoke exposure in vehicles is extremely harmful with open or closed windows. The level of secondhand smoke in a car with a closed window is 12 to 15 times higher, the level recommended as safe by the EPA, and even with windows down, exposure levels are still 3 times higher. Unfortunately, despite this research illuminating the harmful effects of secondhand smoke on our children's health, many smokers continue to smoke in confined spaces, specifically vehicles. More than half of smoking households smoke in the car, putting the health of our most vulnerable citizens at risk. Multiple states have realized the importance of protecting our children from secondhand smoke in confined spaces. For example, Texas, Oklahoma, and Alaska prohibit and sharply restrict smoking around foster children in homes, cars, or both. California, Maine, Arkansas, Louisiana, and Puerto Rico have all recently enacted a ban on smoking in vehicles when children are present. Now it is time for Oregon to protect our children. House Bill 2385 will protect our children from the most toxic secondhand smoke environment that remains unregulated today. Thank you for holding this public hearing, and I urge you to send House Bill 2384 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, thank you. Questions? Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned the states. How many of those are primary offenses? How many are secondary offenses? Do you know?
I am not familiar, but I can get that information to
thank
you.
Other questions? Thank you. Thank you very much. Just check one more time. Is anyone here for Representative Greenlick? Not seeing anyone or hearing anyone jumping up. I'm going to start with the list.
Wait, Tom?
Oh, well, we may be finished by then, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, direct we go.
All right, here we go. I've got Dr. James Lace, Regan Gray, Kathleen Bradley, and I'd like a fourth chair to please come up, and that is going to be Alejandro. Alejandro and I.
Karan.
Karan. Sorry. Thank you very much for coming forward. All right. We'll just go across this way.
Okay. Reagan. Chair Brzezanski, members of the committee. My name is Reagan Gray. I'm a policy analyst with Children First for Oregon, and I'd like to express our support for House Bill 2385. Children First's mission is to make Oregon a place where all children can thrive, and we believe that all children deserve a healthy start in life. But exposure to secondhand smoke can stunt a child's healthy start because this exposure is especially damaging for infants and young children whose lungs are still developing. A child's exposure to secondhand smoke can result in decreased lung function, causing coughing, wheezing, phlegm, and breathlessness, in addition to acute lower respiratory tract infections such as pneumonia and bronchitis. Studies show that childhood secondhand smoke exposure increases health risks and doctor visits. The exposure causes a buildup of fluid in the middle ear, resulting in 790,000 visits to healthcare providers, often resulting in childhood operations and childhood hearing loss. exposure to secondhand smoke causes 202,000 asthma episodes in asthmatic children, and annually we see 430 SIDS deaths that are associated with secondhand smoke exposure. So we see these issues as very preventable, and House Bill 2385 as a vehicle to prevent some of these. Thank you.
Dr. Lice.
For the record, my name is Jim Lice. I'm a pediatrician. I work here in Salem. I represent the Oregon Medical Society and the Oregon Pediatric Society, and I deal with the effects of secondhand smoke every day in my office. We see that we take care of the kids that she's talking about that are exposed to secondhand smoke. We deal with the parents who say that they smoke outside. They don't smoke in their car. They don't smoke wherever else. But we get to see those kids over and over again at the same visit. We ask them to even try to stop smoking, they always look at me like I just fell off a tree last night, and that's just something that's not within their purview. But anyway, that's a side issue. But one of the things that kids can't do, they can't escape. If a child's in a car seat, restrained, can't open the window up, that child is actually, you know, having to suffer the inhalation of smoke. We encourage parents not to smoke in the home, but the car is especially bad just because oftentimes at this time of the year the windows are rolled up and the amount of smoke that they inhale is a lot more. The list of diseases associated with that, she actually listed very nicely. The things that we see over and over in our office are going to be the colds, the ear infections, the pneumonias, the asthmatics, the kids who actually use a lot of health resource dollars, and oftentimes many of these kids will be on the Oregon Health Plan, and that will come out of the state money. So we look at this as a way to save actual money for the state if you can reduce the incidence of respiratory tract diseases. There's the whole issue about secondhand smoke and the development of cancer and chronic lung disease. We have a nurse in my office who's 45 years old who actually has chronic lung disease. She never smoked a day in her life, doesn't smoke now. Her parents smoked a lot when she was growing up, and so she gets to deal now with this whole issue of chronic lung disease and then the high risk for lung cancer at a subsequent date in her life. So if you can reduce smoking, if you can reduce the exposure to the products from smoke, we think it's totally worthwhile. There was some mention about education and how this, you know, stacks out. I've been involved with the legislature over a number of years, and a number of different child protective things that have come into play have shown that education oftentimes by itself doesn't work. Classic example would be bike helmets. Back in 93 when we did the bike helmet bill, we had less than 5% of children in the state of Oregon who used bike helmets. Now we're up to about 75%. It's a combination of education and a little bit of a stick, and parents and children get the message that, oh gosh, this is against the law, gosh, I want to be a law-abiding citizen, and so oftentimes they'll follow through with that and they'll do both at the same time. So we think it's worthwhile to put this in the statute. We think it's worthwhile to actually put some teeth into it and not just my blah 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 in the office every day when they try to counsel my parents, and realize that the rough numbers are about 20%. The state has put out some new numbers that the rate of smokers in the state is down to 17%. If you look at newborn babies at Salem Hospital, it's still a pretty solid 20% of mothers that are smoking. So any impact that we can have to reduce the exposure to these children at an early age and later on in their life to the toxic effects of tobacco is totally worthwhile.
Thank you. Kathleen?
Chair Brzezinski and committee, my name is Catherine Bradley. I'm the administrator for the Office of Family Health in the Public Health Division in DHS, and I'm speaking on this issue today as the maternal child health director and as a public health nurse, and we are speaking in support of House Bill 2385. Much has already been addressed that I have in my testimony that is there before you. There are a couple of other aspects, though, I do want to bring to your attention. Children that are exposed to secondhand tobacco smoke do have more medical visits, are hospitalized more frequently, and lose more days at school. The issue of harmful health outcomes has already been addressed by several of the other speakers. This issue about smoking in cars and the suspension of the harmful particles within those cars, what we found, and particularly as public health nurses in the field, and we're working with many of our families very quickly understand the implications because they're used to dealing with issues within the home. They understand they need to be smoking outside the home. Not smoking within a car is a very different level of action that they're finding difficult to move forward with. A lot of that is because the habit of smoking within a car is a much more natural thing, and so not being able to do that is much more difficult for that parent to do that. We are concerned about our children that do not have the ability to choose the environment that they're within. It's not their purview, whether they're an infant in a car seat or a young child, to be able to say to the parent, please don't smoke, and have that be considered to be an appropriate thing to do. Some parents can hear that. A lot of parents can't. So we really feel that we're creating an environment in cars that children don't have any choices around. They don't have any options around in terms of protecting their health. In the survey work that we've looked at, over 60% of Oregonians are also in favor of banning smoking in privately owned cars. The important thing also to note is while 80% of current smokers in Oregon who have at least one child at home have rules forbidding smoking in the home, less than half of those actually have those same rules within the car. This is an issue of cultural change, and we all know the struggle that our society has been going through with this. You know, 20 years ago, we didn't think about smoking in a workplace. I'm a nurse. I remember going on breaks in the back room, and people smoked during the shift change, and they smoked in the break rooms, and that was considered the norm. That's no longer a norm, nor would we expect it to be. We expect our work environments to be safe. We're asking for that same consideration for our children in terms of that our children are protected within the family car. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee. My name is Alejandro Caral. I am State Director of Government Affairs for the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, and on behalf of our members, I'm here to urge you to support HB 2385. You've heard much of the testimony, and I've submitted written testimony. I will summarize that. But I want to mention, first of all, that the health effects that you've heard about today are caused by more than 250 harmful toxic chemicals, many of which are carcinogenic, found in secondhand smoke, which include formaldehyde, benzene, vinyl chloride, arsenic, ammonia, among others. And, of course, this results in putting children at greater risk of abnormal blood pressure, cleft palates and lips, childhood leukemia, attention deficit disorder. It's also implicated in sudden infant death syndrome, acute lower respiratory tract infections, ear infections, as you've heard. In a 2007 report published in the Journal of Circulation, the Journal of the American Heart Association, found that secondhand smoke can damage the endothelial lining of the arteries, which in turn impairs the blood vessel's ability to dilate. What is problematic about this is not only the impact, but the fact that this damage to the arteries is actually not only partially reversible even after secondhand exposure has ended. So clearly the harmful effects have long-term consequences. It was mentioned earlier, the Harvard University School of Public Health study, and I wanted to put some numbers to that study because it is, I think, shocking how the concentration of particulate matter in cars. The EPA has found that concentration levels for 24-hour exposure levels higher than 40 micrograms per cubed meter are basically the limit. But particulate matter concentrations after only one cigarette in a car shut up concentrations averaging 272 micrograms per cubed meter and as high as 500 micrograms per cubed meter when the windows were closed. So clearly, even with the windows rolled down, even with air circulating in the car, exposure or concentration of particulate matters in the cars are significantly higher than EPA recommended limits. The study concluded that smoking in cars under typical driver and traffic conditions provides potentially unsafe secondhand smoke exposure, and it's obviously not surprising. So I think these studies and the evidence you've heard today really give you all that you need, really, to support HB 2385, and I certainly hope that this committee will move forward on it. Thank you. Happy to answer any questions.
Question for anyone on the panel. Thank you very much.
I have a question.
Senator Blumenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know which of you is able to answer this. Some of us are, I guess, mature enough to remember the days when smoking was permitted on airplanes. And was that change made for health reasons? You know, it's different because typically one does not roll down the windows in an airplane. But were those changes made to ban smoking in airplanes for health reasons? Anybody know the answer?
For
I think the decision, there's a couple of decisions that are, you know, factors that went into that. One of the things is just the tonnage of particulate matter that gets caught in the filters when on the airplanes, and actually it's an unbelievable amount that comes out there. I know that was one thing that I remember back and then back when they started doing that. But I think there was the other issue about the airline attendants and their secondhand exposure to that. So I think those were the two things. But there may be something else that went into all that. But I think there was just basically a thing just about the actual weight, you know, of particulate matter that got caught in the filters too.
Chair Przanski and Senator Bonamici, while I don't think this was as well known at that time, what we are also aware that actually beyond secondhand smoke, there's actually third-hand smoke, which is the issue of particulates that get embedded into the material and into the furniture around. So in an airline setting, actually, the fact even that you didn't have smokers, the particulate matter would be there. That's the same thing now we're dealing with within homes as well as within cars.
Thank you.
All right. Just a comment there. Fire safety was a major issue at FAA in that. And the second thing for the record is don't believe all you hear about the filter systems on aircraft. They're not as good as they claim they are. So whatever's in
that
the air is going to be recirculated.
At all.
So it's probably even worse in this particular case, let alone anything else that's out there.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you all very much for coming forward. My next panel is going to be Dr. Don Austin, Christina Swartz, Nicole, and I can't get the middle, but it's Armstrong. And then I have Ashley, and it starts with a D, and it just kind of lines across. So. Ashley D. We'll do that. Doctor?
Good morning, Chairman Przanski and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Donald Austin. I'm a physician, board certified in preventive medicine, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Public Health Association. OPHA is the professional organization of health workers in Oregon that are protecting our health, and OPHA strongly supports HB 2385 for several reasons. First and foremost, we support this bill because of the harmful effect that exposure to environmental tobacco smoke has on children, particularly in confined spaces. You've heard about the excess respiratory, ear, and other infectious diseases in children caused by exposure to environmental tobacco smoke. When I was an intern working in the emergency room at OHSU, I recall examining an infant brought to the ER by her young parents who were traveling cross-country in a minivan and sleeping in the van. We admitted the infant because she had pneumonia, and the parents couldn't understand why that baby developed this pneumonia because they'd kept her warm and well-fed, and none of them had colds or coughs or sore throats, and the baby's blankets, I recall, just reeked of tobacco smoke. Tom McClellan, Oregon's DMV administrator, states in the cover letter of the driver's manual that driving is a privilege and that the safety of the driver and of the passengers depends on the driver. So Oregon already acknowledges that the driver's responsibility for passenger safety. It's just that some drivers don't recognize that compromising their passenger's health is not safe. This bill does not prevent an adult from smoking. It just tells them where they can, or more importantly, where they can't smoke. HB 2385 does not compromise anyone's legitimate freedom of choice. It does not infringe upon anyone's right, because there is no legitimate right to strap a child into a chair in a closed space and smoke cigarettes. We would not tolerate it if adults did this to children in a closet, because it would be abusive, and we should not tolerate it if it's done in a car. Oregon regulations currently prohibit foster children from being transported in the foster parent's vehicle with a smoking individual. All our children deserve the same protection. The U.S. Supreme Court has rendered a decision that an inmate in a prison may sue the prison if they are housed in a cell with a chain smoker because they could legitimately claim cruel and unusual punishment under the Eighth Amendment. There's no moral right to be able to subject our children to the same cruel and unusual punishment, and we need to assure that our children have the same legal rights to health as an incarcerated felon. This bill does not cost the state money. It reduces the risk of acute illness in our youngest, most vulnerable population, including those in our Medicaid program, and so it saves the state money in addition to protecting health. OPHA urges your support for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee. My name is Christina Swartz, and I'm here today representing the American Lung Association in Oregon, and to urge you to support HB 2385, which would create an offense of smoking in vehicles while a person under the age of 17 is in the car. A 2008 study examining tobacco pollution in cars found that secondhand smoke created by smoking just one cigarette reached dangerous and unhealthy levels in vehicles, even under varying ventilation conditions. In fact, these levels were several times higher than those found in smoky bars and restaurants. Even with all the windows rolled down, extremely high levels of secondhand smoke were found in cars, putting all riders, particularly children, at an increased health risk. The U.S. Surgeon General recently stated, children who are exposed to secondhand smoke are inhaling many of the same cancer-causing substances and poisons as a smoker does. But because their bodies are developing, infants and young children are especially vulnerable to the poisons of secondhand smoke. HB 2385 takes the next step in protecting children of Oregon from these dangers. Children can't fight this battle by themselves. It's important that we fight it for them. Four other states, as recently mentioned, Arkansas, California, Louisiana, and Maine, have already taken this step, and it's time for Oregon to do the same. I urge you to support HB 2385 to make Oregon a safer place for kids. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak.
Thank you.
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nicole Palmateer Armstrong. I'm here simply as a constituent and a citizen. I'm a resident of South Salem, and I'm here to urge your support for House Bill 2385 on behalf of my two stepchildren. They are 7 and 11 years old, and when they are with us, we are, which is 50% of the time, we're able to protect them to the very best of our ability. But my 7-year-old stepdaughter indeed does have asthma, and on the times when they're not with us, we're not able to offer that kind of protection. And they do run into this issue often. My 11-year-old stepdaughter, who spends a fair amount of time in the Capitol, asked me to do what I could to help with this bill. And so I ask you for that support. My job, I feel, as a step-parent, and certainly her father, too, is to offer them all the opportunities to grow up as healthy as possible. And I think having lungs intact are one of those responsibilities. So I urge your support of this bill.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you all very much. I'm going to call Ashley again. Again, I cannot read the last name. Marty Hazelton, Kylie Ferrandez.
You're taking a poll, who's Ashley?
Yeah. Okay. All right, whoever wants to...
I'm Tim Fasori. I'm on the list there, Senator.
And, Tim, I haven't called you yet.
Well, if you don't mind, if it's okay, I brought two students. They're a little nervous about the process, so I thought maybe I'd just come up and help them through that.
All right,
just a little
bit. You can warm them up. We won't bite. We're glad you're here. Take a deep breath before you testify, and we'll listen. Tim, go ahead.
Okay. Senator and members of the committee... my name is Tim Fasori. I'm a teacher at Marshall High School in Bend. We traveled over this morning, got them up at 4 so they could be here. We're an alternative high school. We serve a population of students who are very transient, have less than stable family situations, and for the most part haven't been successful in traditional schools. To say that their view of how the system works for them is one of skepticism is putting it mildly. So in September of 08, my law class got to discussing rights and rights of people, and it evolved to rights of children, and they got pretty excited about the possibility of what could they do in this issue of the rights of children when it came to smoking in vehicles. Now understand, you hadn't passed the law banning smoking in all public places at that point, so the class began researching effects of secondhand smoke, most of which you've already heard from testimony, so we're not going to talk about that. Very shortly after our first discussion, my students drafted letters asking if what they could do to get some help. And they sent letters to all elected officials, both state and federal, the governor, and health organizations. Unfortunately, they didn't get a lot of response. So time passed, and they were a little skeptical and wondering if the system was really going to work for them. Then, as you know, thanks in part to Representative Riley and HB 2385. This bill came to light. We were notified of it. The kids were very excited about it. Representative Riley asked if a couple of students could come over and speak. They're here. And I would like to introduce them at this time. Marty Hazeltine and Ashley Dresser is her last name. And they're going to talk from the heart, basically. And you'll hear from them now. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. Marty, you want to go first or Ashley?
Yep.
All right. Need a microphone.
I'm a student at Marshall High School in Bend. And
Marty, before you get started, I do need you to put your name on the record so we'll have that so if anyone wants to know who's speaking.
Okay. I'm Marty Hazeltine.
Okay.
And I go to Marshall High School in Bend. So here to talk to you about House Bill 2385. I'm in favor of this bill because I'm one of the millions of kids that ride in cars with a smoker on a daily basis. I do not like the constant barrage of smoke being emitted by my father while being trapped in a car, no matter the distance. He is always smoking in the car and does not consider the smoking not smoking while my brother and sister and I are in the car. I'd rather not be one of the 50,000 people that die every year from lung cancer and heart disease, nor do I want my brother or sister to be one of the 300,000 children with lower respiratory tract infections. To quote the immortal words of Thomas Jefferson, all men are created equal, they are endowed with their creator by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuits of happiness. Aren't children born with these rights as well? If we have the right to be smoke-free, shouldn't we help the children have a smoke and cancer-free future? I definitely say their rights deserve protection. This is why I believe this bill should be passed.
Thank you.
My name is Ashley Dresser, and I am a senior at Marshall High School. I am speaking to you because I believe that this bill should be passed to ban smoking in vehicles when children are present. Several states already have this law, and Washington is considering it as well, so why shouldn't Oregon have this law? Cigarette smoke contains over 4,000 chemicals, and secondhand smoke kills more people than for those who actually smoke. Oregon State Treasurer Ben Westland suffered from lung cancer and almost died, and he never smoked a cigarette a day in his life. Just the other day, when I was driving down the street, I glanced over to my left, and there I saw a woman driving with her son in the car. She was smoking a cigarette. He was about 6 years old, and I saw him holding up his shirt and covering his nose when she was smoking. It touched my heart deeply to see an innocent life suffering from secondhand smoke. Every day, I am forced to ride with people who smoke around me, and it causes me to feel sick and also causes me to stink throughout the day. I feel strongly about this bill becoming law because a lot of innocent people suffer every day, especially kids, due to secondhand smoke. And a lot of them can't help it because when it's their parents, they have no choice in what their parents are doing. We are all concerned about the rights of the individual and freedom to choose. But who is watching out for the rights of the minor children who don't have a voice and who can't choose? I thank you for your efforts to help save children from harmful effects of secondhand smoke.
Thank you.
My name is Kenneth Fernandez, and I'm a junior at McMinnville High School. I have a written testimony by my mother, and she is a Head Start teacher in Abraham Hill County, and she's been for 12 years, so she has had me bring her written testimony. And I also received some signatures from students at McMinnville High School. We, the students of McMinnville High School of McMinnville, Oregon, advise you to support House Bill 2385, which will protect us, the youth of Oregon, from the harmful dangers of secondhand smoke while a passenger is in a motor vehicle. We, the students of McMinnville High School, believe that the scientific evidence is clear that there is no safe level of secondhand smoke and that exposure to secondhand smoke in a vehicle is toxic and hazardous to our health. We, the students of McMinnville High School, note that while we are not all of voting age, we have the right to be protected from secondhand smoke while a passenger is in a vehicle. We ask you to recognize our right to breathe clean air. We, the students of McMinnville High School, ask the Oregon State Legislative Body to pass HB 2385 and remember that this bill is for us, the youth of Oregon. We, the youth of Oregon, want the protection found in HB 2385 and ask that you defend our right to be a healthy life.
right, thank you. Before you step back, any questions?
A question.
Question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for being here. I wanted to ask, Marty, how old are your brother and sister?
My brother is turning 12, and my sister is turning 15.
Thanks. Thank you.
I want to thank you all very, very much for coming forward. I know this is a big thing to come in front of people you don't know to give testimony, and it is a process that I'm glad that you've got a great teacher that's giving you that opportunity to, one, be here, and two, all the work that you did before getting here today, knowing that you put a lot of preparation and time in and research and getting everything together to give us your views. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, our next panel is going to include, make sure I've got everyone here, and that's, at this point, our last panel, and these are add-ons, so I don't have the full names, Mikhaili and Eric from Dayton High School. And let me ask if there's anyone else in the audience who wanted to give testimony that did not get signed up on the sheet. Come on up, guys. All right, so what I need you to do is just tell us your name for the record, and then go ahead and give us your testimony. And take a deep breath. We're not going to bite you. We're here to listen.
I'm David Nygren. That's a correction. My brother is Eric, not myself.
Okay.
I'm currently a senior at Dayton High School, which is right near McMinnville High School that you just heard Kylie speak from. Through the efforts of our teacher, Mr. Fluke, myself and Mikhaili have the opportunity to participate in a program known as Youth in Government each year. This year, we're presenting a bill which is very similar to the bill that we are speaking on today. And we feel that this is important because being high schoolers, we can see the effects that smoking have on children in our school and every day. There is at least one person I know who comes to school every day with her clothes smelling like smoke because both her parents are chronic smokers. And I just feel that while it may not necessarily be apparent to the consequences be apparent right now, I fully believe that there are consequences in the future. I've recently been accepted by the Naval Academy, and I run track and field. I believe that none of this would have been possible if my parents had been smokers. I'm very blessed that they are not, and I feel that it's my duty to help come forward and speak for the students at Dayton High School who do have parents that smoke, that feel that their health is being harmed because of their parents smoking and they are unable to do anything about it.
Thank you.
My name is Mikhaili Mizak, and I'm also currently a senior at Dayton High School. And I feel very blessed that I got to be a part of Youth in Government because it was my first year, and then on top of that, I got to be a part of this bill that I strongly, strongly believe in because I'm all for people having rights and for people getting to, you know, choose if they're going to smoke or not. However, at some point, we have to be able to say that it's harmful. And it's one thing to choose to smoke and know that it's harmful for your own health, but it's another thing to put someone else's life in danger by smoking in a car, especially with a minor, because, I mean, smoking has a demonstrated negative effect, especially on youth when they're not fully grown and they're still maturing physically. And in a car, which is such a close, closed-off area, it's even worse. And even with the windows down, it's still not healthy. And I think that it's time that people really put their foot down and say that, you know, we protect children from, you know, other forms of abuse, and this isn't helping them. And if it's hurting someone, then it clearly isn't a good thing. And so I strongly support this bill because I think that we need to give children a voice, because when you're that young or when you're not of age, you can't really stand up for yourself and say, can you, you know, you can try, but it's really difficult to, you know, have a say in a situation like that. And so I am very much in support of this bill, and thank you for having us.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Questions? I want to thank you all, too, for coming forward. I know this is a big step to come in front of people you don't know, and it's very, let's say, formal, a lot more formal than we'd prefer it to be, but that's how the process kind of is set up, and tradition is tradition. But thank you very much, and congratulations on your acceptance to the Naval Academy. One of our council's daughters is just completing her first year at the Academy. So, well, tell Mr. Taylor that.
I'm sure he's listening.
Yeah, he's probably saying Golden Navy, right? All right, thank you very much. And is there anyone else, again, that wanted to give testimony on House Bill 2385? Not seeing anyone come forward, we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2385. And, Council, let's go ahead and get started on the work session.
The work sessions are all Mr. Taylor's, who I hope was listening about the Naval Academy, and we'll be running down the hall right now.
All right, so we're going to take a short recess, so we'll go off for a moment. Good morning again.
Good morning.
Good boy. We're back on the record. We're now going to start on the various work sessions that we have. I'm going to go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 2272A.
Chair, members of the committee, all the bills in front of you except 2163 come to you from the Department of Justice Support Enforcement Division. I see Ronell Shankle here. 2272A mandates that every child support order must include a medical support clause, requires that the clause address the providing of private health care coverage, prohibits requiring a parent to provide health care coverage if the parent's disposable income is less than 150% of the federal poverty level. Chair moves committee, there are no amendments before us for the bill, to the best of my knowledge.
Question, Council. I wrote down in my last one, minimum fiscal impact. Did we have a fiscal statement?
I believe we do.
For whatever reason, I wrote the problem. It's not exactly correct.
Mr. Chairman, since there are no amendments, it's minimal because that's what it came out of the House on.
Okay.
Yes.
Move 2272A to the floor.
Pass. Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2272A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And Senator Dingfelder, why don't you take this one if you'd be so kind.
Sure.
And we'll close that work session. We'll open up our next work session on House Bill 2273.
Mr. Committee, House Bill 2273 applies the license suspension provision to all support enforcement matters when the child support payments are in arrears, not just ongoing cases. So, Mr. Chairman, of the committee, no longer eligible for child support because they've aged out, but the parent still owes child support in arrears, and still be subject to license suspension. License suspension is usually used as a last resort.
All right. So basically, if you're on the hook for the money, you're still going to be on the hook, okay. And they can still use these means to get you to comply.
That's correct.
Question, Council. I wrote negative comments on this before, but I think if I understand what the chair just said correctly, what we're really doing is we're extending this. If it's something that already happened, we're simply extending the time to collect it, right?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Yes. Okay.
All right. And Mr. Chair, if I recall the testimony, I had raised an issue because I had the constituent whose license was threatened, even though his employer was withholding the child support. It was his license that was threatened for no fault of his own, and I know Ms. Schenkel testified about that issue, and I think it's actually counterproductive to take a license away from somebody when they're trying to collect, but it's my understanding that it's typically done as a threat to get the payment made rather than to actually take away the ability of the obligor to work or drive.
Mr. Chairman, as the committee, Senator Bonamici, that's with the testimony that we've received through the years is basically that. And the license suspension is something that's a federal requirement. We had it prior to federal law, but we didn't have it to the same extent that federal law required us to do it.
All right, so this is a 10th Amendment issue now, states' rights. Senator Boquist.
Yep, so moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2273 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And do you think Senator Wissett should have this one?
Yes.
He said the rest of them.
All right, Senator Wissett gets this one here. We've been good to him the first 2 days of his absence.
He had a concern about the bill, Chair.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Well,
maybe we should have another chair.
The chair will be back up. We'll see if we can shame him into it.
Yeah, I did my notes.
So. Okay. So we'll close that work session 2273. We'll open up work session on 2274A.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 2274 allows the Department of Justice or District Attorney to request the Department of Revenue collect past due child support from an obligor's tax refund when the obligor's child support child is incarcerated in the closed custody facility of the Oregon Youth Authority.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, when your child is in the youth authority, you are subject to child support. The federal law does not pay, they pay about three-quarters of the age-dependent children. When you're in closed custody, you're not eligible for that. Similar to the situation on
Social Security and other benefits when you're in prison, and this statute clarifies that they can still go after the parent for the child support.
All right.
Follow-up question, counsel?
Sure.
Yes.
When you say going after child support, are we going after the other one-third? Is that what we're going after?
Mr. Members of the Committee, when you are a ward of the state, they have a right to go after you for everything.
Yeah.
Okay, so follow-up question. If the federal government's paying two-thirds of it, and we're paying one-third of it, what is everything?
Mr. Chairman, as a committee, when you're behind bars, the federal government doesn't pay anything.
Okay, all right.
So it's a full meal deal.
Full meal deal.
Got it. Mr. Chair, move HB 2274 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Broquist moves House Bill 2274 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussions? Any objection? So ordered. Volunteer on this one.
I'll carry.
All right, Senator Bonamici will be our carrier on this one. Close the work session on House Bill 2274. Open the work session on House Bill 2276.
Chairman of the Committee, House Bill 2276 requires the Child Support Division to have an assignment of rights before providing support for services. Requires a written application that is signed by the person seeking assistance in collection of child support, the last known address of the obligor and obligee, and an acknowledgement that the person is applying for child support services. Senior members of the committee, if my notes tell me that this is a recommendation as a result of a federal audit.
Mr. Chair, move 2276 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2276 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered, and Senator Boquist will be our here on House Bill 2276. And we'll close the work session, and we'll open the work session on House Bill 2277.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2277 allows for change in child support order by the Support Enforcement Division based on a change in physical custody. Does not allow for change in support enforcement order when the child is in physical custody of the parent with obligation to pay the child support if the child is there for parenting time or visitation. No amendments, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, move 2278A to the floor with a due pass.
All right, Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2277 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Just a quick comment, Mr. Chair. My notes say marginal on it, but I'll still support the bill, and then I'll figure out why I wrote those notes later.
Are they in the margin?
We'll see. All right, any other comments? Any objection? So ordered. And we'll put Senator Wissett carrying House Bill 2277. All right, closing that work session on 2277, opening a work session on 2278A.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2278A provides that a judgment for child support award expires 35 years rather than the current 25 years.
Mr. Chair, move 2278A to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2278A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I had a couple negative comments written on there, but I'll go back and research it, and I'll support the bill.
All right. And any other questions or objections? Any objections? No objections? So order. And let's see.
I'll carry it, Mr.
I was going to say Senator Dingfelder would be so kind to carry this one. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2278A and open up our last work session for 2163A.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2163A comes to you from the Oregon Military Department. The bill establishes that appeals from the Armed Forces Court of Appeals for Oregon go directly to the Oregon Supreme Court, allows the Adjutant General to appoint judge advocate legal assistance for a period not to exceed 12 months, provides a period of service members active duty may not be included in determining any statute of limitations, reduces from 6 months to 90 days after release from active duty the time period to a member of the Oregon National Guard may seek relief from the obligation or liability incurred before active duty. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have copies of them. You have the dash three amendments in front of you, and they simply change that 6 month period to 1 year. If you go over to page three, on page lines 43, it simply removes the bold language 90 days and inserts 1 year.
Clarification, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Okay. We had considerable discussion with the military department, including their staff judge advocate, General Caldwell, Oregon Bar Association, and Counselor Nye, and we kind of went back and forth and found out that one federal law is at 90 days, one federal law is, I think, at 9 months going to 12 months, and it's kind of all over the place. The real key issue we're trying to address is with the number, with 2,700 troops coming back a year from now, what's the timeline we're going to have and the workload, frankly, that two staff judge advocates can support and all the volunteers from the Bar Association, which is why the counselors at the General Caldwell's suggestion and counselor's suggestion, we went to the one-year mark, although we'd be back fixing this because we didn't have enough volunteers to help these people. So that's where we're at right now.
All right, and I appreciate that to be on the record, and it seems appropriate that change be made. So the chair will entertain a motion regarding the Dash 3 amendments.
Move the A3 into 2163, Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist moves the A3 amendment into House Bill 2163. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, move 2163 as amended with A3 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2163A as amended by the Dash 3 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to carry.
Any objection? So ordered. And Senator Boquist will be our carry on this. And, Council, anything else we need to do today?
Chair, members of the committee,
All right, so just for the record, it's 9:02, and apparently Representative Greenlick has not made it, so we're adjourned.